platforms throughout the campaign, and it is rare to have one on such a vital and engaging topic, and rarer still to have so many interested people here. So I'm sure I'm going to speak for everyone. I say thank you for coming and thank you for having us. My name, as you've heard, is Christopher Taylor, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the context in which I'm viewing this issue in the course of my campaign, and then talk to you a little bit further about affordability and affordable housing policies. I came to Ann Arbor in 1985. I came here for college, into the music school, actually. And like many aspiring opera singers, I am currently a lawyer. I work at Cooper Hathaway. It's a Ann Arbor firm. I work on Main Street, where my practice focuses mostly on representing local businesses and individuals. I have a family, my wife, Eva Rosenwald, and my two children, our two children, Henry and Ruby. They go to Pioneer and Tappan. I've been on city council for around 6 years now, and I believe that Ann Arbor, broadly speaking, is going in the right direction. We're not perfect, but I think we're doing the right things. I'm running for mayor because I want to help lead Ann Arbor to what I believe is really a common vision. It's a vision of an active community, an active city that takes progressive action to maintain and improve the quality of life of, honestly, everyone who lives in Ann Arbor. So what do I mean by that? By that I mean I want to focus on providing, on the one hand, all the basic services that cities are obligated and have a pleasure to provide: public safety, neighborhood safety, street repair, sidewalks, and all the pipes underground. These are things that we have to work on day in and day out. But we do not stay in Ann Arbor. We do not love Ann Arbor because of these things that we must continually do. We stay here because, like I said, we take progressive action. I think that the city has an obligation to do that too. I think that we need to work on, for example, I've been on the Parks Commission, and our parks need to be beautiful and well maintained. I think that we, as a city, are environmental leaders, and we have to constantly move forward in that direction, protecting our watershed, doing what we can with respect to climate change. We also have a vibrant economy that we need to continue to move forward. And we also, most germane to this conversation, need to take action with respect to homelessness and affordable housing. This topic is, I mean, one that's much too little, much too small a topic, and it's also much too big a topic. It's much too big because, you know, we're a city, we're not the federal government. You know, at some point, looking at ourselves, our resources, thinking of affordability and affordable housing in this context of all the different things that the city has to do, what can we do? How can we even begin to address this problem? And then on the other hand, it's also too small to think of affordability and affordable housing, because honestly, those things really speak to, they speak to poverty, and they speak to helping folks with less. And there, housing is just one facet of it. You also have to deal with things like transit, and housing, of course, and jobs, and employment, and disability. So once this conversation is too big, and once this conversation is too small, and so, you know, why do we even bother? And we bother
very quickly.
This is the climax.
I know.
We bother, for some in the house, we bother because it's a mitzvah. And for some in the house, we bother because we love thy neighbor. And for some still in the house, we do this merely because it's the right thing to do. And so that's, I think, why we're here, why so many of us are engaged in government, why so many of us are doing what we can here in faith communities and outside of faith communities. It's important that we do what we can, where we can, to help each other out. And so that's how I view this conversation. That's how I view the issues of affordability, homelessness, and housing. And that's what I'm delighted to have talked with you tonight and to hopefully address as your mentor. So thanks.
Thank you. And I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
I can tell this is going to be a hard group to wrangle, but
so I'm not going to get the buzzer in exactly 2 minutes, right? Is this on? Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm Sally Hart Peterson. I'm a city council member from Ward 2, and we've been asked to describe our approach to affordable housing in our opening statements, and so I thought it might be relevant to share a little bit of information about some of the values that I grew up with as a child. I'm the daughter of an Episcopal minister, so I feel somewhat comfortable in the Episcopal church here. My dad permanent supportive care and supportive of work environment as well, and I'm very delighted to say that she is thriving. We grew up in a church rectory, which was in an economically disadvantaged section of North Attleboro, Massachusetts. As children, we were somewhat immune to the income disparity in our neighborhood, and I have fond memories of playing kickball, kick the can, sardines with the neighborhood kids in the church parking lot. But the church parking lot was actually adjacent to a parking lot behind the local liquor store. So at night, there would be, you know, every now and then some disorderly conduct and some dramatic exits from the rear entrance of the liquor store. These were disruptive, but we knew that we were relatively safe. These experiences bred in me the values of compassion, inclusion, the acceptance of differences in each other, and the desire to treat each other with dignity and respect. And these are the values that inform my approach to affordable housing and homelessness in Ann Arbor. I believe that the best antidote to homelessness is a job, but there's no one-size-fits-all solution. A strategy must recognize that there's a continuum of needs. We all know short-term housing, or maybe we don't all know, but short-term housing, rapid rehousing, is typically for people who have a catastrophic loss of income or an illness or sudden loss of income, and maybe they just need short-term 3 to 6 month housing to get back on their feet. Transitional housing is probably more appropriate for youth, 1 to 2 years, but may not be the best approach for older adults. And then permanent supportive housing is more appropriate for people who are chronically homeless. And these are people who have trouble holding a job or maintaining housing due to mental health issues or to addiction issues or because of a felony conviction. Ann Arbor needs to be inclusive so that everybody has a chance to live, work, and play here in Ann Arbor. And this may mean providing more affordable housing. I think it's time now to demystify affordable housing. We need to have a robust community engagement process, and maybe this dialogue will start tonight, so that we can discuss the benefits, the costs, the risks, and the fears of affordable housing. We need to realize that affordable housing is a solution to problems, not the creator of new ones. By expanding affordable housing options and models in our community, we can make sure that zero-income people can even provide to become contributing members of our community.
Thank you, Sally. Thank you. I'm Stephen Kunzelman. And I'm Stephen Kunzelman. And I too am a candidate for the mayor of Ann Arbor. I don't have a prepared speech, because I'm going to go off message a little bit, because I think if many of you have been watching the debates, we all have pretty much a message that we've been sticking to. That's what we do. Right up against my
there we go.
So what I'm going to talk about as a member of this community that I grew up in, okay, is some of the events that have shaped my values as how I approach affordable housing and homelessness. All right, as a council member representing Ward 3, I live over by Packard and Platt, historically known as East Ann Arbor, also known as one of the largest geographic areas of affordable housing for low to moderate income families. And I have been serving that community, my side of East Ann Arbor, quite well for having been reelected to a fourth term. And so one of the things that the residents of East Ann Arbor are quite concerned about is piling it up, okay? And we've heard a number of topics about building the affordable housing on Platt Road. We've heard about an affordable housing project on Burton Road. And when I talk to people, it's like, enough is enough. We have so much over here, and our schools are feeling it. I think Scarlett Junior High School has almost 90%, if I'm correct, I can't know all my numbers, of school-age children that are eligible for free lunch. Okay, so that's the kind of the context in which I live in. Right? But what are the events that have shaped my life and my values? Okay, I was not born in Ann Arbor. I actually moved to Ann Arbor when I was 2 years old. My mom grew up in Ann Arbor. She graduated from St. Thomas. And my grandparents down in Helmore Ray were founding members of St. Francis Catholic Church down the road here. My mom left Ann Arbor at 18, and in Chicago, she met my father doing Catholic social relief work. I was conceived, and at the age of 2, my mom moved back to Ann Arbor as a single mother. And from 1965 to 1969, my mom and I lived downtown, Ann Arbor, a single mother and a small child, all right? We lived on Civil and Hill, we lived in an apartment above where Cottage Inn is, and we lived on Liberty Court, right up against where the library lot is today, where it's always been today, okay? I say that to you because that's my perspective. I don't think anyone in this room can believe or will advocate that we should have affordable housing downtown where a single mother and her child is going to be able to live, all right? We just know that that is not a reality. So I put that into context of I'm not going to try to go back in time to meet that kind of value, as much as I would like to, but we're not going to. The second event that occurred during my tenure here in Ann Arbor is when I was serving on the Planning Commission in 2004. Just after the city bought the Y lot to engage in a speculative affordable housing venture. That venture took 10 years and culminated with us luckily not losing a lot of money, but an incredible amount of time, staff time, resources, all went into that event. The third event was just last year, where the DDA amendments that I proposed in front of City Council resulted in a public hearing where the homeless were brought to the meeting and given the opportunity to speak, all right, to the City Council regarding DDA ordinance amendments. And at that public hearing, my best friend that I grew up with, also known as Disco, some of your friends from the Mission will remember who he is, tried to articulate his words. He didn't know what he was there to talk about, but he was there. And he tried to articulate some words, and he really struggled, and he was sweating, and I watched him, my best friend. And what I realized at that moment in time is that there are people of influence in the affordable housing and the homeless community that would use the homeless for political purposes in order to try to prevent the passage of the amendments to the DDA ordinance, which I would like to remind everyone, I proposed at that time $500,000 of the DDA TIF capture going to the housing fund to provide housing downtown and within the district where there had been no money before. We were successful at least compromising and getting that down to $300,000. So with that, I have three priorities.
Okay. You're going to have 3 minutes at the end to give your priorities. Okay. I've already given you a lot.
I'll say thank you for that. Those are my values and the perspective that I bring to the table.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm not Steve's mother, but I moved to Ann Arbor as a single parent of a small boy. And I lived in university townhouses, one of the big places I could afford to pay the monthly rent. I had to manage to have sufficient funds to pay the down payment for that, because it wasn't, it's a cooperative, it's not cheap to move into, but it was one of the few places in Ann Arbor where I could afford to live, for that matter, for the next decade. My son and I moved around Ann Arbor. His father had a long distance complaining that I seemed to move once a year, and so I did, because that's what happens when you're a renter. When I finally settled, I settled in the Old West Side, and when I truly settled was after I married my current husband. Long story, but we've all had our stories about what shapes us. I'm not here to talk about myself, because honestly, I don't think that's what you're here to learn. I'm here to talk about affordable housing and the issue that we all face trying to increase the number of units we have in this city and the difficulty we have doing that. I hear that there are more than 500 individuals living rough in our city today outside no permanent shelter. I'm told we need about 5,000 more units of affordable housing right now to meet the demand from families, the elderly, the mentally and physically limited. And the Delano Center has 75 permanent beds. And stretching their capacity during the winter just doesn't meet the demand. Over the past decade, the city and the nonprofits that work with the city have been able to add fewer than 100 new units. And I haven't even begun to address the issues of housing affordability, which is a different issue than affordable housing, or the impact of gentrification on established neighborhoods. Affordable housing is not a local issue.
declared that it would cost over $40 million to complete the deferred maintenance of our public housing. As mayor, I'll continue to work with the Housing Commission as they find creative ways to refresh and rebuild that housing. The county is currently conducting a study of local needs for affordable housing, and I will use that report to help set priorities for different types of housing, for families and seniors, for veterans, for the mentally ill, for those with addiction problems, for those who need a front door to protect them from themselves. For each need in our community, and I will seek opportunities to expand our housing options, whether through co-ops, privately owned, publicly owned, or some complex business arrangement that could escape me today, but will be there for us in the future, because this is a national problem and this is a local issue, and it's our challenge to meet it locally, but to maximize the impact we have. Thank you.
Thanks, Sue.
Small group of people experiencing homelessness.
In addition, there are discussions going on about ways to make parks less hospitable to those who have homes. As mayor, what will you do to ensure that Ann Arbor does not criminalize or stigmatize homelessness and the people who are experiencing it, and treats our most vulnerable citizens with respect and compassion?
You know, obviously, the eviction of the homeless from the site down by the Andy Dancer from the river is a very emotional issue. There's no doubt about that. Homelessness in general is a very emotional issue. But at the same time, the rule of law is also very important. And whether or not we want to ensure that all parties follow the law, that's, you know, something that we as a body have to address. As mayor, I'm not about to point the fingers and say, go and take care of that to the police department. That's not how I operate. I think everyone knows that the city works under, given our restrained resources, under complaints, okay? When somebody is camping out on MDOT property, the city has no authority to say it's okay to do so. When people are camping out on city parks, we can't just look the other way as well. If some of you might remember, just a couple years ago, we were one summer overrun by a number of youth that came from outside the city via what they call Punk City or Punk Days or whatever in Ann Arbor. And they were down in Bandimere Park and they were harassing people. All right. So just because there's a group of homeless people that are being really kind and considerate, there's others that are not. And that's where the problems start lying. As much as we want to accommodate those that are being well-behaved, we also have to respect the fact that there are those that don't. And when they don't, the rule of law still applies. It's not an easy situation, and it's an uncomfortable situation. But let me just say, I mean, we cannot go back to a day and time where people are living in substandard conditions in tents. I will not support a tent city in the city of Ann Arbor, now, today, or tomorrow. It's not okay. I won't support trying to accommodate people living in substandard conditions. I worked in a community when I was at Sumter Township for 10 years ago, where 40% of the population lived in one of five mobile home parks. You want to talk about affordable housing, there's affordable housing. When you go out there today, the majority of the pads in those affordable home parks are empty. Why is that? Because the economy, for some reason, is not supporting that type of living situation. So with the compassion that we want to have, we still have to have the rule of law. And as mayor, that's what the most important thing is. We cannot just let situations get out of control, because when you start in one park, then it starts showing up in the other park, and then people start complaining. And I appreciate that everyone here is very, very, very concerned about the homelessness. But when I'm out there campaigning, I also hear a lot of people that are really concerned about how they work really hard. They work hard to pay their taxes. They work hard to put their investment in their home. And the last thing they want is to find out that the city's not upholding the rule of law so that the neighbor is accommodating somebody living in their backyard in a tent. You can't allow that, and I won't.
Thank you. Okay, Sabra and Chris.
Sabra and Chris.
It's what I'll continue to do if we don't put our resources where we say our priorities are, then they're not really our priorities. Thank you.
Why some years it could be zero and some years it could be a million and a half.
to a small village. Many people I know would pay a small village to fund human services because it would be something that was constant and dedicated. Many other people think that they've already paid too many taxes and they would vote against such a thing. It becomes a challenge for us to find dedicated funding streams because our funding either comes from general funds, which is all your property taxes, or it comes from millage funding, and that millage funding is generally dedicated to a specific purpose or a specific service. And so one of those purposes might be affordable housing or human services. But right now, they tend to be very practical. Fix the streets, fix the parks, pay the bills. It's a real simple equation. So I can't promise a dedicated funding stream unless we can come up with a much more innovative approach to the way we acquire money in the city. Instead, I can tell you that as long as I sit on council, as long as you elect me mayor, I will continue to do what I have been doing, looking for opportunities where the funding is not something that is already dedicated and I'm taking it away from police or fire or streets or parks or services, but I'm taking it away from our savings. Every year the council allocates funding to its capital reserve, and that's exactly where I've used funding from in the past. I feel very strongly that that creativity to create a funding stream is a challenge for each of us, but short of a village, I'm not certain there will be one.
Thank you. Anybody else speak? Go ahead.
Well, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that as the sponsor of the amendments to the DDA ordinance that led to a dedicated funding stream from the TIF capture, have been pretty serious about finding funding. And I want to make sure that that money is available. In fact, I proposed $500,000 a year, and it got reduced by Mayor John Heath down to, I think, about $300,000 a year. But I'm more than willing to bump it back up to $500,000 as mayor. I will propose that amendment. The second thing is, we also have to remember there's been an incredible amount of wasted funding. And so I go back to the library lot. Over $50 million was borrowed to build 500 additional parking spaces and four blocks of streetscape. And in that $50 million, $9 million was supposed to go towards pedestrian improvements, and $6 million was supposed to go towards street improvements on 5th and Division. If you go down there today, you will see those four blocks between Liberty and Huron on 5th and Division, and ask where did those millions go, okay? I won't read the resolution that authorized all that, but there was a lot of money. But when I asked the city CFO, I asked him, when is the TIF fund finished contributing to the library link debt? And he said, FY 2018 is the first year projected not to have parking-related debt service. The TIF fund is expected to continue paying the non-parking-related portion until the debt's paid off. Well, that doesn't make any sense because there isn't $15 million of non-parking-related expenses down there. It's all in the parking structure. So you can imagine $15 million would have gone a long way to build affordable housing downtown Ann Arbor, on the Y lot for that matter, or on the library lot, or anywhere downtown. But that money was squandered. It was squandered for the big dream of a hotel conference center. And this is why at the beginning of the introduction, I said there were a number of events that led to my opinions, or shaped my opinions, about how we've been using homelessness for political purposes. I may be frank, I may be bluntly honest, but I'm not going to pander.
Okay, thank you. Another question. Okay. So, this goes to Chris.
Christopher, I'm so sorry.
I'm very informal. It's a bad fault. We believe that for a parent to work full-time and still raise their family in poverty is morally unacceptable. In Washtenaw County, a family of three needs an hourly wage of $23.47 to be able to support her police salary. The poverty wage, so this would be the wage you would earn just to get to the poverty level, is $8.80 in Michigan. The current minimum wage is $7.40, as we all know. As mayor, will you support increasing the city's minimum wage so that people can afford to live in our community? And what rate of increase would you support?
The short of it is that I don't know what the city's options are in this context. So let me step back a little bit and be more broad. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I think the minimum wage legislation and other protections for workers has been a tremendous benefit to people throughout the country throughout the years. I support very much Ann Arbor's efforts with respect to the living wage, which extends to contractors that work with the city. And if it were within the power of the city to raise the minimum wage for the city, and I don't know that it is, but if it is within the power of the city, that would obviously be something that we would have to have a very important and earnest conversation about. I have not heard that debate come up, which leads me to infer that it may not be within the city's power, that it may be preempted by state law, as so many good ideas that come before the city that are recommended to the city are. Regrettably. But if this is something that the city can do, then it is something that we ought to move forward on. As to the amount of the minimum wage rate increase in excess of the current federal minimum wage, I'm afraid that that's a question that I can't answer today. It ought to be a wage at which a working person can work and live and thrive. What that amount is, I do not know.
Thank you. Okay, Sally?
She's waving.
Thank you. With respect to the options available to us about a minimum wage, with all due respect, if there aren't options available to us, we need to go out there and create them. We need to work with our state legislators to figure out a way to do that. Zingerman's is a good case study. They voluntarily raised their hourly wage. They have more satisfied employees because of that and higher retention. That is a very good case study for Ann Arbor. Going, and I said to those of you who are familiar with my campaign platform, I'm very strongly emphatic about the need for the city to have an economic development strategy. We have no bona fide strategy. We need to find a way to create jobs in a way that is independent from those that are naturally provided by U of M, that are available to a wide range of people with a wide range of talents, from workforce, from work service employees, culinary employees. We need to work better with Washtenaw Community College and some of their job training opportunities, because they are very much an avenue to employment in Ann Arbor. And so in order to raise the minimum wage, to have that kind of discussion, that would be part, one of the components of an overall economic strategy that I firmly believe the city needs to take a lead in developing as one component of it.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Could you say?
Sure.
Truly,
I'm
I know. The city does have a living wage policy, but that living wage policy doesn't apply to everyone in the city's employment. And when I inquired about what it would cost the city to do that, the response I got back was that it would be a significant cost and a difficult. It's not that significant a cost, and it shouldn't be that difficult for the human resources people to help us get to this point. If the city doesn't set its own standard, how can it expect other businesses to follow suit?
I agree with nothing that's been said. I mean, it is very clear that the state legislature, the courts, you know, struck down living wage ordinance. And so we don't have the authority to impose that on private contractors working in the city or private sector working in the city. And as you know, So, but you know, it's a very difficult situation, I think, considering we hire a lot of consultants and contractors to do our work. We also have to remember there's a lot of administration in terms of verifying that all those things are occurring. And that is bureaucracy, and bureaucracy also costs money. And so, you know, it's a tough balance of our budget, and you know, while it makes for a great opportunity to think that we're going to lift all boats using city dollars, the fact is we have a lot less dollars in the board to do so.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. You guys are, you know, I almost feel invisible up here, but I'm trying to get you stopped. So that's good, because I would do the exact same thing to me if I were you. So that question is already there. So here we're going to, oh boy, I'm going to get trapped. Yeah, save it.
Yeah, you're doing it in a circle.
I'm going down the road.
Okay.
Sally's next. Sorry, Sue. Okay, Sally, in the next 4 months, which obviously is before you become mayor, we recognize that, what will you do to ensure that Ann Arbor has adequate emergency housing for the winter of 2014 and 15?
I actually had a conversation with Mary Jo Cameron about this yesterday, and she tells me that there's a planning group that's been being put together now. They're meeting within the next couple of weeks to already talk about what the plan, I think it's Vern McDaniel, Mary Jo Callen, Steve Powers, GCO, maybe a few other people are planning now to for a winter like we had last winter. One of the things that frankly baffled me a little bit last year when we had the polar vortex and the ongoing bad weather is, granted, there was no one that was ever left out of the cold, but it took a lot of retroactive cobbling together of resources. And I think, you know, we learned from last year that the weather's, you know, we're having more extreme weather events. We need to plan now to have a winter like we did last winter. That may be turning to the faith organizations, opening church basements, having a plan, a communication plan. Again, I mentioned before about the need to have a fabric of services woven together. And to do that, we need to create that now so that we can, again, provide that, have to be at the ready to be proactive next year, should we have another winter like we did. I also called some of the different leaders in the Shelter Association leadership and asked the question, what would it take to raise the weather amnesty to 20 degrees? What would that do to our resources? Yes, we know funding would be constrained, but again, if we plan for it now, we plan ahead, and we have the faith-based organizations at the ready, you know, maybe we call the Red Cross as well. We're not so afraid to call a weather emergency. Again, it's just planning. We need to plan now for a weather, for a winter like we have last year. Thank you.
Okay, Sabra?
I agree with everything that Sally said. We need to plan now. We need to have started some time ago, and it's positive that the city staff and the county staff have been working together to create that plan for several months. However, we also need to put resources behind that plan. My understanding is that whatever the plan may look like, it will cost the city and the county potentially as much as $300,000. And I think that we all need to think about whether we are providing the resources to the various organizations through donations, but we also need to think about what the role of the city and the county should be in providing that funding. Because without funding, you don't have services. You don't have consistent services, you don't have reliable support. Without funding, you don't have shelter. You don't have sufficient shelter, you don't have consistent place to be. And funding is follows planning, so we have to do both.
Thank you. Anybody else? Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, you know, the great things have been said about how we need to plan fund, but we also have to need to know what it is, what we're planning for. We also have to know what we're planning for. The last two council meetings, Mayor John Hika has said to us at Council on the Public that it is his concern, based on his conversations with the Delano Center staff, that there's a lot of people coming from outside the county because of the generosity of our services. How can we keep funding those? How can we keep funding more and more? So that's the question. We all want to provide more funding. Everything you read is all about funding. And if we want to provide those services, we need to know what level of services we are going to provide rather than making it open-ended. I agree, we want to provide those services and nobody's going to be left out in the cold. Nobody. We have the money in our capital reserves. If we need to do a budget amendment at the time, we're going to do so. I think we even made sure that the Delano Center was made whole for any of the services that were provided during this last winter. But we need to know what is enough. How can we afford, can we afford to take on, the homelessness in Southeast Michigan? It may be a tough pill to swallow, but do you want to do that? Is that our role? And so think about it.
Thank you.
I guess very briefly, and just to pivot a little bit off of what Councilor Councilman just said, the fact that so many people come to Ann Arbor, so many people come to Washington County from outside the county to receive services during the winter, and receive services, honestly, during other times of the year, highlights that what we have here is a regional problem. It is a problem that is larger than our city, it's honestly larger than our county. We need to make sure that as we decide what we do with our resources, as we decide for whom can we care, for whom should we serve, that we make sure that we work with our regional partners, that we make sure that we work with our state legislator to help focus the attention on the important issue, to help focus the attention on the ways that the issue can be most properly addressed and improved. And that is by mitigating poverty. That is by providing mitigating poverty through jobs, through transportation so people can get back and forth, and through the provision of the creation of the encouragement of low-income, affordable housing.
Okay, thank you. We're going to do a little time check here. At this rate, I think that I could squeeze in two more questions, but that would limit our time for these many audience questions that I've been provided. So I'm going to go with one more question for now, and then we'll see how we do about that. Okay? All right. So this question is for Steve. Steve, if a constituent asks you, what should I do when I'm approached by someone who is homeless? How should I respond? What do you advise them to do or say?
I would suggest with kindness, right? Homelessness is not a leprosy, it's not being a criminal, it is somebody in an unfortunate circumstance. And we all want to be treated kindly, and it's all about being treated kindly and compassion. So I think that's the number one issue. We want to have that compassion in our community, and we want to be treated kindly. And we want to do unto others as others would do unto us. That's pretty simple.
Okay, Sally.
I didn't hear you answer the question. What would you tell them? I have been approached by homeless people on the street, and I usually tell them their first resource is the Delano Center, and I know their resources are important, so that's what I told them.
Okay. Anybody else? You don't have to.
We all want you. Each of these questions is interesting to us.
Good. That's what we hope.
So I think that the answer is it depends on the circumstances. If somebody from Ground Cover News approaches me, I use it as a dollar. Please don't give me the paper. Because I can only read so much, and after buying five or six papers in the course of a month, and they're all exactly the same, it's not worth it to me, and it saves them. If it's somebody who is asking for spare change at the farmer's market on Saturday morning at 7:30, I remind him that he's been kicked out of St. Andrews. Because you get to know the people who are asking you for things. And it has been more than once, somebody who approaches me on the street in a parking lot tells me they're hungry. I have not just fed people, I've handed them money.
folks who ask for money on the street or other things on the street, and the homeless. We've looked at who the people are who are on the street. People have looked at people who are, and often it's not people who are homeless. These are separate questions. These are separate issues. They're both gut-wrenching, but they are distinct, and it's important, I think, that as we frame how we approach these two populations, that we bear in mind.
Thank you. Okay. I'm going to do one more. Is that one? Is kind of good. What do you think? And we have really good questions. So, and this goes to Sabre, right? And then it's fair, because I realized if I cut it off there, then Sabre was getting cut off. So, in the past, Sabre, Ann Arbor offered housing developers a premium if they included affordable units in their proposed developments. The premiums afford developers extra sort of incentive, or in my language, points, to change their developments in ways that go beyond basic zoning regulations. This was rarely used. So, would you support making the inclusion of affordable units a threshold premium, one that is mandatory for developers if they are to be eligible for other premiums?
Okay, I love this question. So the problem is that it brings out the wonkishness aspect of me, so just bear with me. In the past, we had a process called planned unit developments. Some people call them PUDs. I never liked that term. But a PUD, if it included housing, was required to include either payment or housing geared toward a level of affordability. So it was one or the other. Either they gave the city money for affordable housing, or they installed units that were guaranteed to be affordable. What's wrong with this picture? And the answer is, we were getting 1, 2, 3 units in a building, and then we were just getting cash payments. The cash payments, while welcome, never topped $77,000 a year, and I have to tell you, you can't build a new unit of housing for $77,000. So then, when the city did its rezoning of downtown, whatever that's worth, it included the opportunity for a developer to make a bigger building, put more people in that building, if the developer chose to include affordable housing. So the absolute height of the building could get bigger, but the amount of space inside the building could get bigger if they included affordable housing. Oddly enough, nobody did. Because affordable housing is not something that developers particularly need or want, and affordable housing wasn't necessary for them to make their profit. The Planning Commission, the Housing and Human Services Advisory Board, and many, many people in the community are trying to find a way to make additional housing acceptable in our community by requiring developers to